This is the Radio Walensky Podcast. I'm Richard Walensky with new and archive interviews from the Probabilities and Book Waves, Art Waves programs on KPFA FM and Pacifica Syndication. My guest is Aya De Leon, who is a novelist and poet. She is the Berkeley Poet Laureate. She is a spoken word artist. There are several novels, among them the most recent adult novel, is That Dangerous Energy. Other novels include A Spy in the Struggle, Queen of Urban Prophecy. There's a feminist heist series. There are also several young adult novels, the most recent of which is Untraceable. Aya De Leon, your books focus on climate change, and you're also a climate activist.
I am of African-American, West Indian, and Puerto Rican heritage. And so in 2017, when Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico, I was devastated. And certainly Puerto Rico was really devastated, and as were other parts of the Caribbean. And, you know, we watched in horror. And I had been concerned about the climate crisis, and I had been concerned about the debt crisis and other crises of colonization in Puerto Rico. But you know, in Hurricane Maria, we really saw colonization and the climate crisis come together to create unprecedented devastation. And in spite of, you know, many decades of history for me in being involved in different movements, movements for racial justice, feminism, and I had been involved in anti-nuclear organizing here in the Bay Area in my teens with the Livermore Action Group, it really all came together. And I was determined to do something as an author. And I was writing a feminist heist series, sex worker heist series out of New York City. And that was the biggest platform that I had. And I was working on a different book in a two-book contract, but I asked my editor, could I change topics? And she said, yeah. And out of that came the book Side Chick Nation, which was the first novel published about Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, because I already had a contract before I even started writing the book. And you know, it's a heist, a romance, kind of a thriller, it's erotica, and it's about this disaster that happened at the crossroads of colonization and climate change in Puerto Rico. And, you know, won an award. Naomi Klein gave it a great blurb. And that is my origin story as a climate novelist.
Let's go further back, though, because I do want to get to That Dangerous Energy, your most recent adult novel. But going back a little, you have interesting parents. Your mom, Aya De Leon, political figure. Your dad, musician.
My dad, as many folks here in Berkeley and the Bay Area know, is a musician. And I grew up without him. He and my mom divorced when I was really young. So I grew up with my mom here in Berkeley from the early 70s. And my mom was a political activist. She was the first Latina on the Berkeley Board of Education. She was part of Berkeley Citizens Action, which was sort of like the left-wing progressive organization in the 70s and early 80s. At one point, she was going to maybe run for mayor. She sort of started to run for judge, but then my grandmother, her mom, got sick. She continued her political career as a musician herself, and she ran three different jazz clubs here in the East Bay. Anna's, which was originally in North Oakland on Shattuck near Alcatraz, Anna's on University Avenue near Grant, and Anna's Jazz Island downtown, I think. All three clubs, at least 20 years. And she also sang, and she was a freedom singer with a group called Higher Ground in the Bay Area and continues to sing. Now she sings with a jazz band called the Jazz Therapists, and they mostly sing at senior centers here in the East Bay.
And your dad, Taj Mahal, did you ever tour with him?
Never. You know, like I said, my dad, you know, and he and I can, you know, we have a good relationship now, but as a kid, he just really wasn't around and didn't have much impact on my life growing up. But, you know, he was always there. Sometimes as a young person, when you're growing up away from a father who's well known, sometimes sort of looming in ways that I didn't understand and were, you know, challenging and confusing. And, you know, other times we would connect, but I never went on tour with him. I just wasn't a part of that part of his life.
You did have both parents as artists, one later on and one at the time you were born, but that would have affected you in growing up.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I know for myself, and particularly for myself as a Black woman, having two artist parents was just such an incredible leg up, not so much in terms of them being able to give me any kind of external hookup, but it was an incredible leg up in terms of fighting the kinds of internalized racism, internalized sexism, and internalized classism that most artists face, which, you know, the arts historically in the US and Western tradition associated with the elites. You know, there's this sense that, like, it's not for the proletariat, it's not for ordinary people. The truth, of course, is that artists are part of the working class. We work incredibly hard and we get undercompensated and we could use a lot more unions. You know, in the places where we do have unions, there are really deep union fights that have been going on these last several years. But the mystique, the illusion about artists is that it's an elite pursuit and that arts aren't for regular folks. And, you know, most of us, particularly for women of color, you know, we have incredible imposter syndrome. We, you know, have this sense that we're not the right person. And so for me, growing up with two artist parents, it was an incredible advantage not to have those internalized recordings that so many of us have, which is like, this is for somebody else. We're not the right kind of people to do this. And so I watched my parents both really kind of go for it in lots of different ways. You know, I mean, with my dad, it certainly meant his career meant that, you know, didn't make him a really present dad when I was a young person. But I certainly did get to see him out in the world doing his thing as a Black man. And that was very powerful.
You started out as a hip hop artist.
So here's the story. I started out as a novelist in my 20s, but I did not have the attention span to write a novel in my 20s. I had great ideas, but I could not pull them off. So at the time, there was a great poetry and spoken word scene here in the East Bay, and I became active in the scene, and I started doing poetry and spoken word and slam poetry. And so that was my first public life as an artist, was in spoken word. And then I became a hip hop theater artist in the early 2000s. And I did that for a little while. And, you know, in that intervening 20 plus years, I finally developed the maturity to finish a novel. And I started publishing fiction in 2016.
So let's go back to that first novel then. How did you pull it together? How did you finally go, okay, I'm old enough. I've done all this. I'm going to get my ass in gear. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to do it.
Well, you know, I was working on fiction the whole time that I was doing spoken word. But, you know, one of the things that also shifted was that the literary industry shifted. So when I was coming up in the literary industry, you know, it was very, very hard for people of color to get published. It was just so difficult. There were so few voices of people of color. And so I tried. I tried to get a literary agent. I tried to get things published. I tried and tried. And I just couldn't get the traction. So part of what was happening was I was maturing, but the literary industry was also maturing in terms of broadening who it was going to welcome. And the other thing that was key was women of color and Black women have always written. And there have always been some Black women's voices out there. But when I was initially coming up, genre fiction was so deeply frowned upon and marginalized. And by the time I was publishing in 2016 and between then and now, that genre bias has been much more examined, criticized. And I, you know, it still exists, but it doesn't exist at all in the ways that it existed in the 80s and 90s. So not only did I mature, but so did, there were big changes around racism and sexism in the literary industry conditions that I was interacting with.
Well, what I found is when we started the show in the late 70s into the 80s and 90s, looking specifically for women of color, for people of color, every time I would try to find an author to balance on my show, that author would have already been on KPFA twice. They weren't there. You had to look, seriously look, if you were looking for balance. That's not the case anymore. Now it's much, much better. That Dangerous Energy, your latest adult novel, as I was reading it, rather than focus on the politics of it, one thing I noticed very early on was your ability to create a page turner. So that's sort of where I want to go with right now, because a lot of people write novels where they want to get their point across, but if it's not entertaining, it's not going to work. But creating a page turner where you're going, what's happening next? Was that internalized? Did it start that way for you?
I grew up in a household with a mom who read crime fiction. Mysteries, paperback mysteries laying around the house, murder mysteries, spy novels, thrillers. My mom read all that. And so I would pick up little Agatha Christie here, a little Chester Himes there in my teens. And I really followed in her footsteps in terms of my literary tastes. I loved mysteries. And then as I got older, my taste shifted more to thrillers. I love a good thriller. I just really enjoy them. And a lot of the thrillers, particularly like spy thrillers, are all sort of from the perspective of the state, right? It's CIA, FBI, MI5, MI6. And, you know, the politics of those stories in terms of who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, are pretty mainstream. I mean, you know, you do have this sense of like the corruption, the internal corruption, but they are pretty much, you know, rah-rahs for the United States and England, for the colonizers. And I got really interested in writing thrillers that were political, that were also really fun and sexy with women of color in the center. And so I had a feminist heist series. I think heist is incredibly subversive because anytime you're looking at a heist book, it's about wealth redistribution. So I have this Justice Hustlers heist series, mostly set in New York. And then I have these standalone novels that exist in the same world. Essentially, all of my novels exist in the same world. The adult novels, the young adult and middle grade novels, you'll see little things. Like I have fashion designers and they just exist in the world. I have artists. I have a whole sort of hip hop R&B set of artists that all exist in the same world. Some characters will bounce from one novel to another. It's really fun. And I've created this universe. I think of it as my Justice Hustlers universe, and everything's set in this same universe. And so I love thrillers. And I think thrillers are all political, right? Because you have some urgency, some challenge, some set of problems, some set of dangers. And what is endangering people is incredibly political. And so why not the climate crisis? Why not big oil? Why not in the Justice Hustler series? Why not, you know, a group of corrupt corporate CEOs who are involved in a sex trafficking scandal? That's what I love to write about. And I love making it fun and sexy, but I also like having really hardcore progressive left politics.
Well, that Dangerous Energy, you have a gold digging climate activist.
She is a gold digger, right? She is. But she doesn't start out as a climate activist, right? She starts out as this sort of young, broke artist who finds herself in a love triangle with this fossil fuel mogul and this climate activist, right? And, you know, eventually she begins spying for the movement. So, yeah, she's sort of torn between, is it about her individual prosperity, right, in moving towards trying to marry this fossil fuel mogul, or is she gonna align herself more with this man of color who is a climate organizer and, you know, is trying to get her to spy on her, you know, the boyfriend, the fossil fuel mogul boyfriend that she lives with, and she's sort of a mixed heritage Black woman caught in between who finds her way.
You're a professor, you teach writing, right? Creative writing. How much of that that is in that book. How much can be learned and how much is instinctual?
Oh, everything is learned. There's a reason that it took me 25 years to publish my first novel because, you know, I started out as a lefty teen and, you know, my first attempts at novels were just like a lot of speeches, you know, like, rah, this is wrong, you know, and I love a good speech and I love a good sermon, but people don't pick up a novel because they want a speech. They want characters. They want a story. They want to have an experience. They want to have the sensory details that take them into that place. I mean, I think sometimes people want escape, but more than that, people want story, you know, and it took me decades to learn how to write a good story.
This is a tough one. What happens if you're writing a story, you have your goal, which is the political end of it. You have a second goal, which is truth in character and truth in plot. What happens if you're writing and the truth in character and the truth in plot are not necessarily going to take you toward your political goals?
I think that that's the art as an artist. I mean, that's what you have to figure out. In some ways, I haven't had that problem a lot, but it is a problem I'm having now. I'm working on a book about the climate crisis where I want to see us win. I want to see us win the climate crisis. So this book that I'm working on now called The Last Concert on Earth is a book where we get to climate justice. And it's really hard. You know, I think in the previous books, what I took on was wanting to have some kind of win, right? So in my Hurricane Maria book, you know, we're trying to get out of the hurricane. We're trying to become politically active. We're trying to, for the main character, in A Spy in the Struggle, which is about FBI infiltration of an African-American racial, climate, and environmental justice organization, where it is we're trying to go is for the spy, you know, the infiltrator to basically to get won over by the movement. That's what we're going for. In That Dangerous Energy, you know, it's about both the young woman, the young gold digger, becoming a spy for the movement, but also for the movement to like have a good win, right? The fossil fuel non-proliferation treaty makes a little cameo at the end, and we have some climate reparations, you know, spoiler alert. We do have some wins, but I'm trying to write towards the big win, and it's hard. It's hard, but I do believe, you know, the kinds of things that I rely on as an author really has to do with the inherent goodness of human nature. And that, I mean, we see people behaving in all kinds of horrible ways in the world, you know, so it's not like people are always behaving well. But I do believe that human nature is inherently good and that people behave badly because of trauma and harm that has happened in their lives that they are acting out. And so with that kind of orientation, I do believe that it is always possible to create a book that moves towards justice. It's always possible to create a book that moves towards peace and wholeness and characters being connected. Because ultimately, what people want deep down is peace and wholeness and justice and connection. It's just that they've experienced a lot of trauma and violence and harm and injustice and exploitation. But that there always are ways of bringing a character or a group of characters, or because there's romance in a lot of my books, or a pair of characters to a place of harmony. And the other thing that's great about writing thrillers is, and then the people who are not trying to come around to harmony, you can just kill them off.
It sounds to me then that what you have to do, the connection you have to make, is on one hand, you kind of need to let the inner voices go, no matter, and take the novel wherever it's going to go, no matter how bad. And then you have to rejigger, go back, add several Chekhov's guns, and kind of edit your way back to where you want to be. Does that sound about right?
I mean, there's a lot of circling back. There's a lot of circling back. And Yeah, there are a lot of cycles in the books, and there are a lot of formulas. That's the other thing that's really fun about writing thrillers and, you know, playing with romance and stuff. There's an expected set of tropes, there's an expected structure. And so it's really about getting in there and playing with that structure. And like I said, with killing off certain bad guys, you know, that's part of the thriller is like the big confrontation with the bad guy at the end where you got to kill off the bad guy. So part of what's interesting is figuring out like who are these characters going to be? Who are my good guys? Who are my bad guys? And looking at it from a lens of trauma, there are no actual real enemies and bad guys. People are just set up against each other.
Do you outline it all?
Oh my God, I'm such an outliner. One thing that has been really amazing for me is my first, so I'm writing genre, you know, I'm writing different genre fiction, spy, heist, not all of it, some is drama, but a lot of spy and heist fiction. My first publisher was a genre publisher, and they wanted books that would come out at most at the time a year apart. My first two books came out 10 months apart. So I had to learn how to write fast. And I use the NaNoWriMo method. NaNoWriMo is National Novel Writing Month, where it's this amazing organization and method and movement where people write a whole novel in a month. So you have to write fast. It's not usually a good novel, it needs a lot of revision, but it is a draft of a novel. So I use that method. And in order to be able to do it, I need to outline. And I outline really, really tight before the month. And then I just, boom, write for 30 days. Sometimes it's more like 60 or 90 days. But then I get that draft out and then I revise it. So yeah, I'm totally an outliner. And it really helps when you're writing these kinds of formulaic genres because, you know, we know what's supposed to happen next. We know, you know, what are some of the different tropes? What are some of the different things that need to happen in terms of pacing and structure in those books. And that's part of what's challenging with the book that I'm writing now is that it's more of a drama. It's not really in that formula. And so I can't outline in the same way that I have in the past. It's tripping me up, but I'm going to crack that code.
Well, there's also the thing where you're writing it, but on the other hand, you have to let go to let your unconscious write it. And sometimes characters themselves sort of get in the way and take over. Is that happening in this book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with this particular book, like I said, this particular book, I'm trying to write a plausible story of what it would look like for us to win the climate crisis, right? And so if you look around right now, I cannot make an argument that we are currently winning. So it really is about thinking about, you know, and I'm committed, nobody's going to have superpowers. And I'm also, one of the things that I'm trying to change from recent books is a lot of the time the wins would happen because powerful people decided to do the right thing, or influential people decided to put their resources or energy or platform behind the movement. But I think what's much harder to find and what's harder to write are stories of ordinary people coming together in collectives that make change. That's really been my big challenge. If what I am fighting for example, as part of the Black Hive, the climate formation and the movement for Black Lives, if part of what we're fighting for is to create climate justice based on, you know, the masses of people coming together and building people power for the wins that we want. How do I write that book that reflects that? Not my most recent adult book, but my book before that, Queen of Urban Prophecy, is about a hip hop artist who is on tour, sort of catapulted in the spotlight, who decides to use her platform to fight for Black lives and to fight for climate justice. And I love that book. But again, you know, it's a story of someone in an exceptional position who decides to use their privilege and powers for good. And that's great, but it's not necessarily going to lead my audience, who's like most of us are just regular people, to think, yes, I will use my multi-platinum, you know, album platform for good. And so I think that's my fight. That's my internal fight right now. Like, how do I write my next story that really is about ordinary people building people power and not this exceptional individual being the one that makes the whole difference? And, you know, I want all of it in the world, right? In the world, I want all the celebrities to be on the progressive side. I want all the senators to have the change of heart. I want all the presidents to decide to do the right thing for the people. But in the absence of that, I want all the people to come together and rise up to build that people power.
It would seem that one way to do it would be to take where you are now, follow it along, see where it evolves, and if it turns out not to work, take 10 paces back, mm-hmm. start from the earlier place, mm-hmm. try a different path. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, try a third or fourth or fifth.
Absolutely. No, you're right. And so the thing that's been interesting, the most recent breakthrough that I had that I thought was really, really important, there's a bunch of things already in place in this novel. And, you know, the protagonist is a musician who's on an upward trajectory to become a star. And that's fine. That's the novel. But what I realized I need is she's going to have either a sister or a cousin who becomes a union organizer. Because what we really need is a second set of eyes in this book that are not the celebrity eyes. Because, you know, if we were to actually win climate justice, it would probably require a general strike, right? So, you know, I'm trying to think about if there's going to be a general strike in this book, there needs to be a character who's close to that, not the celebrity. So that's the thing that's missing. And I think the other thing, to be honest, Richard, I think the other thing that's really challenging for me as someone who outlines is I've gotten to the point where I can outline a book and then whip out the first draft and then clean up the second draft and then, you know, polish it up, given what my editor says, and boom, it's published. And I have to go back to what it was like to write 20 years ago, you know, when I wasn't sure what I was doing. And it feels so, I'm so impatient, right? With these last few novels, I was really able to master writing a certain kind of formula. And now I have to go back and be a beginner again. And it's humbling. It's humbling to my ego. It's challenging. It's so much more time consuming. Like you said, you got to go back. Like, I'm not used to having to do that anymore. I'm used to being like, oh, I'm going to whip out another novel. I've written a book a year. I've written at least a book a year for every year between 2016 and 2023, sometimes two books in a year. And this year, I don't have a book coming out. And it's time for me to get on it with this book. And I'm, you know, I'm frustrated because I can't do it as quickly as I want to. That's what happens when you're trying to do something new. And I'm trying to do something new. I've taken some steps that I've had to backtrack, and I'm sure I'll have to do more.
Well, the good news is that once you get that first draft down, you have all the tools at your disposal to speed it up and make people want to turn the page. So you are already in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope so.
Aya de Leon, that's your next project. And I guess you start up again in the fall at UC Berkeley?
Absolutely. This fall, so for any of you Cal students out there, this fall I'll be teaching two classes, one in spoken word and one actually on novel writing using the NaNoWriMo method. All my students will write a novel in a semester. I can't guarantee that it'll be a good one, but I can guarantee that they got to get it done.
You've been listening to an interview with Aya de Leon. Her latest adult novel is That Dangerous Energy. And we did not discuss, but there are also young adult novels. And that one, the latest one of that is Untraceable. And sometime in the future, we will have that new novel and people could see how we could survive the climate crisis.
Until next time, I'm Rich Walensky. Radio Walensky usually posts every week on Sundays. You can write to me either at bookwaves@hotmail.com or richard@kpfa.org. You can find other Radio Walensky podcasts in the Area 941 section of kpfa.org, or you can go to bookwaves.homestead.com or richardwalensky.com for a complete listing of all digitized recordings. You can subscribe to Radio Walensky via iTunes or follow Richard Walensky Radio Shows on Facebook.